Welcome to the AD Aesthete, hosted by me, Mitch Owens, Decorative Arts Editor of Architectural Digest. British broadcaster and horticulturalist Monty Don knows gardens. Legendary British photographer Derry Moore knows how to record them. Together, they've created delightful, diverting, and inspiring books about the same, including Japanese Gardens, A Journey, and Paradise Gardens, the world's most beautiful Islamic gardens, both of which complemented Monty's BBC series of the same names. The latest production of these longtime friends is American Gardens, a sweeping, often surprising tour of landscapes across the country, public and private, famous and obscure, big and small, classic and eccentric. But what exactly makes a garden American? That question and more are explored on this episode of the AD Aesthete. I hope you enjoy the show. Monty, what I found so terrific about this book, among many things, is the foreword, the introduction, where you talk about the diversity of American gardens actually being what American gardens are all about. And I was mulling that over in my mind and thinking, yes, if you had a book about French gardens, I would sort of know what to expect within the DNA of that. Same thing with British gardens and with your book last year, the Japanese gardens. But American gardens seems to be something that, as a writer and a photographer, you have to really get your head around that there's so much out there.
I mean, that's absolutely true. And although we came expecting that, I mean, we've done our research, we've done our homework, it still came as a profound surprise, almost shock, the extent of that diversity and also the effect of it, because you realize that America contains many countries and many nations within it, and that is still happening. And I think the thing that I found with the gardens was that they were an expression of evolution. They were not the finished material. They are not the finished material. You have this sense that America, through their gardens at least, is coming into being. And yet this is the most powerful nation in the world, and yet it is the big brother, you know. But actually, when you see the way the gardens are being made and what they're doing and how they're doing it, there is both the sense of adventure that you associate with America, this can-do spirit, the frontier spirit that goes out there and conquers and has a go in a way that no other country can match. There is also a tentative element to it, of trying things out. Is this who we are? Is this what we're doing? And I'm not sure it's conscious, but it's certainly that increasingly became apparent, is that sort of as though the gardens were trying to work out what they were by doing it. Mm. And on top of that, of course, you have this incredible diversity of geography and topography and cultures. And a garden in Seattle is so different from a garden in Florida or Arizona or whatever. And it's not just climate, it's more than that. And so, yeah, all those things came together in a way that I've not found anywhere else in the world.
So, Derry, when did you and Monty begin discussing the idea of exploring American gardens?
I think we began very soon after we'd finished Japanese gardens. On to the next one right away. I think we probably both had slightly different ideas of what they would be like. And what I was very keen not to do was to produce photographs of what I call English gardens light, you know. And for me, what was so extraordinary, which is, I don't know anywhere else that has it quite so much, are the trees. The trees are incredible. And in a way, much more than the actual sort of gardens, enclosed gardens, you know. I find this feeling of trees and then landscape beyond very often. It's almost like sort of a, I suppose you could almost call it a mixture of garden and parkland. You know, some of the, for example, in Charleston, there's a one called Middleton Place. Well, it's not any English person's idea of what a garden is. It's much more like a park. And it's absolutely wonderful too. And as Monty said, the variety is what's so extraordinary. You know, absolutely, it's incredible that you have that. Then you have somewhere like Vizcaya, which is extraordinary. That is a garden, you know, in a more conventional sense, and very wonderful too.
I think it's worth just adding to that that I've wanted to do American gardens in inverted commas for at least 6 or 7 years. The opportunity never quite came. I visited American gardens in 2007. I did some filming there and realized that I wasn't even scratching the surface of the surface, and had longed to do it because it seemed to be such an enigma from this side of the pond, looking across. It's whenever you ask people about American gardens, they'd almost be, well, yeah, they're just open, you know, they run down to the sidewalk and the picket fences, and that's what they are. And of course, they're just not.
Now, the book is divided up into journeys. Can you talk to that? Were there literally three different trips you
took? There were three trips. I mean, one of the problems we had is Derry and I have traveled a lot together and written and photographed together. And, you know, we don't always agree. We don't always see the same things or want to do the same things. And that's part of the dynamic. And that's what makes it interesting. But Derry has known America for much longer than I have and knows it much better than I do. So therefore had a very different knowledge and relationship with it. Whereas I was coming, although I've been to America quite a lot, it tends to be New York, and America as a country is undiscovered land for me by and large. So we were coming at it with different experience and with different eyes. And Derry wanted to go and photograph some things that I didn't want to go and see. And I wanted to go and see things that he didn't want to see. And it struck us that there was no reason why we shouldn't entwine and interweave rather than plod solemnly side by side and go to the same thing at the same time all the time. I mean, we did a lot, but not all the time. And so that the idea of three journeys meant within that journey, we almost made separate journeys ourselves. We were together most of the time, but it gave us a freedom to do what we both felt was important at the time. And I hoped, and I hope it succeeded, that what would result would be half travelogue, half conventional garden book, because it was a voyage of discovery. We were finding out rather than recording what we already knew. We weren't lecturing, we were exploring. Is that right, Derry? I don't know if that's fair, is it?
Absolutely right. Yes, very, very true indeed.
Now, what were your differences in what you wanted to see and Monty didn't, and Monty didn't and you did?
Well, I was above all interested in what would make good photographs. And I think Monty was, although he was interested in that, he was also interested in the storyline of the places. So it sometimes happened that I was more enthusiastic about gardens than he was, and vice versa, you know.
I think that you know, Derry is a completely pure photographer. He's all eye, and that's EYE rather than the ego eye. And we've often had this conversation, is to him a good garden, the best gardens are the ones that make the best pictures. And I will come to a garden and I'm thinking of the history of it, the story of what made it. I'll be comparing it to other gardens I've seen around the world. I'll be thinking about how it fits in the jigsaw of garden development. So I might find a garden interesting that actually doesn't photograph at all well, or is even not beautiful. Whereas I think it's hard. I mean, obviously Derry knows about gardens, but it's less satisfying for him. It's less artistically rewarding to go for a long journey to see a garden that just doesn't work for him. Whereas to me, it just add a piece to the jigsaw that I'm trying to build up. So we had different agendas. I mean, one of the things also I think about this book in particular, but all the books we've done to a certain degree, writing about gardens is very, very different to photographing gardens. It's not a verbal form of the image, and the image is not a picture of the words. They are two quite separate things and two different people coming at it. And I hope what you end up with is that the sum is greater than the parts.
Now, were you interested in public gardens as well as private gardens when you were going into developing what you wanted to see and record and visit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Derry had access to more private gardens than I did and used that access. But yes, I think public gardens are all part of the culture, you know, whether it be Central Park or the Lurie Garden or, you know, these gardens that are made. I mean, it was also fascinating to both of us, you know, that just the golf courses in Palm Springs, for example, were in their own way, visually, what being influenced by and influencing the garden. So I think that demarcation line, A, is not an issue. If it's an interesting garden, it doesn't matter. And B, it's very blurred. But Derry, you visited some private gardens that I didn't see, which I regret. I mean, I wish I had. I just didn't have the opportunity.
I think the only one I think you didn't see was Medway, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now, were the journeys already plotted out when you came to America for each journey, or were there opportunities on those trips to learn about a new garden that you needed to go and see?
I think both. They were planned fairly precisely beforehand, but then once there, we sometimes diverged, you know, and as Monty said before, we went our separate ways. And for example, I went to Central Park at a different time of year even from him, which was coincidence and which I liked very much. But I think on the whole, isn't that true?
Yeah, I mean, I was filming too, so with a film crew. So I had the timetable of filming, which largely determined it. And as is the way with modern filming, there's no slack. You know, there really is the opportunities for spontaneity in terms of going to see things or making diversions are very few and far between. So on one level, it was plotted out absolutely down to the last car trip, you know, what time we would arrive, how long we'd stay, and so on and so forth. But Derry, you had more flexibility than I did, certainly.
I think I did, because taking still photographs is so much faster than filming. I mean, when you film, you have to do the same thing again and again and do it from different angles, etc.
Also, I mean, I find when I visit any garden, quite often it takes a while to formulate any kind of thoughts or ideas other than sensation. You spend quite a lot of time just trying not to impose sort of your research that you've already done onto what the impressions that are coming through. Just let the shapes and the forms and the colours and just let it happen.
That's absolutely true. But I think the difference is that sometimes we go into a garden together. You had your timetable filming and I would arrive and suddenly the light would be very, very good at one spot. And so I didn't wait, I just went and did it. And in a way, I could see what you mean. I should ideally, I suppose, have let the whole thing sink in. I just did what I could as fast as I could because I knew that the light wasn't going to hold.
But also, I mean, there are many occasions when I've been really busy and rushing around and making notes and other filming and desperately trying to see everything. And I find Derry either lying on a bench or reading a book somewhere. And I'll sort of try as politely as I can say, what are you doing? And Derry has done it. He's got his pictures. The light has been good. He's got the pictures. The light is no longer good. There is nothing he can do from then on that will improve what he's already got. And this incredible sort of confidence of just knowing he's got it. And that's that. Whereas I always feel, you know, I need to see everything and make notes about everything and talk to everybody. And I fill notebooks and take endless snaps, trying to store up material with which to write from. Whereas with Derry, that moment can be literally a second.
Yes.
And he's got it. But it might take hours to get to that second.
And it won't come back.
No, that's the crucial thing. Yeah.
No.
So I think the point that we keep going back to is we both have very different disciplines and ways of working. And I certainly gain a lot from working with Derry. I mean, I find as a writer, I'm working with someone who is seeing the world slightly differently is really helpful and informative. And also, you know, he's very knowledgeable and we discuss these things a lot.
How important was it to get the garden at its best versus just to capture the garden? Because that's always a huge challenge.
I have visited hundreds, if not thousands, of gardens around the world. And I have never yet visited one where they have not said to me, you should have come last week, next autumn, last spring, any time but today, because the garden is not at its best. So obviously you try and organize the trip so you do get it at one of its best, because no garden is at its best ever at just one moment. But the brutal truth is, if you've arranged to get a flight from Seattle to Phoenix, Arizona, you take Phoenix, Arizona as it is on that day or that week or whatever it is. And so you play the hand you've been dealt, but you try and organize it. And there's a lot of planning goes into it to piece it. So we pick the autumn color there and we get the cooler weather there. And we were in Virginia and Philadelphia in July, and there was a heat wave and it was unbearably hot and humid. I mean, for us poor Brits, not
horrible,
really hot. And I mean, no one would go garden visiting if they could choose it under those circumstances.
Exactly.
It was about 100 degrees temperature and about 90 degrees humidity and was not much fun. But the gardens were beautiful.
Yes.
Monty, what were some of the American gardens that you saw, just say a handful, that really stood out to you as a huge surprise? I mean, something that you'd just never seen before.
It's hard to be honest about that because obviously I do a lot of research before we go, so that there aren't many huge surprises, and some of the ones might seem quite minor. For example, I visited a community garden in the Bronx set up by Bette Midler, and I didn't know much about it, and I felt we ought to go and it was worthy. And I visited a lot of community gardens in my time, and a lot of them are more worthy than interesting. And I went in and I sort of entered thinking, okay, come on, smile, brace yourself, be nice. And it was the most magical place. It was just hummed with vibrancy and joy and a community coming together and taking so much from the experience and therefore giving back. I just hadn't expected that to that degree. And it was, I mean, horticultural terms, nothing I hadn't seen before. It was modest, a series of raised beds growing some vegetables and herbs, and it was great. But there was magic. There was genuine magic there. We went to Federal Twist that I had heard about, but exceeded my wildest expectations in New Jersey. That's James Golden. But I love that garden. But then you see Derry, I don't think you did you? Or at least you found it hard to photograph.
That's the one which was, it didn't really have a sort of obvious form, did it?
No, it didn't.
I would call much more a plantsman's garden, perhaps. Or maybe I'm, but so in a way, I just took photographs that worked as photographs, but I don't know if I really captured the whole garden, you see.
It's hard to photograph. I mean, it was, you're right, it was a plantsman's garden, and it struck me as being so sort of joyfully sophisticated. You know, it was really knowing and very clever and very knowledgeable, but wore its learning so lightly. And that was a joy. Visiting rooftop farms in Brooklyn, you know, there's nothing like that certainly going on, or the extent to which it's going on in New York is sort of outside. But so these are not the big and the grand gardens, because they didn't surprise me. I knew I was going to find those. I mean, a place like Vizcaya is extraordinary. But it seems to me part of the American story, you know, this rich industrialist making this extraordinary garden, this fantasy. It was the quirky and the unusual.
I think some of the Californian ones were most surprising.
Yeah, I mean, they were all remarkable. I mean, I don't know to what, I mean, I expected California to be sort of modern and sharp and quirky and I love them. I thought they were, I'm not sure I was surprised by them.
I think I was surprised by I think we called it the Neutra Garden, and also the way in which the house and the garden were interlocked.
But I'd seen that picture before, that photograph, which was taken in the 60s.
I haven't, you see, which was like, and I thought the one outside Phoenix that Steve Marino had done was very surprising.
Yeah.
That was also inside, outside.
Yes, I mean, that was wonderful. I think, you see, what's so wonderful about seeing through gardens is you do get this, certainly in California and in the West, this feeling of lifestyle, how people live their lives.
Well, this is why when you said that, I suddenly was thinking of Sunnylands, which is the most artificial landscape. Derry, it's like one of the Japanese landscapes. It's so colossally artificial and so intense, but yet in a way, it completely reflects the lifestyle of the Annenbergs, the interiors of that house, the architecture, but yet it's like this oasis dropped in the middle of a desert.
It's crazy. Absolutely mad. And there were no trees there when they went, I believe.
Bare, empty desert.
Because we saw nearby a sort of big field, which was apparently what the whole place had been like when they went.
My great regret, actually, in Palm Springs, is I didn't go with you to the Bob Hope House.
What was that like, Derry?
Well, it's like a giant sculpture. It's so sculptural, the house. It's really the house much more than the garden. The garden is sort of... It's tacked on, doesn't exactly tacked on, but it goes with it. But you wouldn't think of it as a garden without the house. The house is what's important there. It's crazy, also another crazy one.
Well, I mean, it's like I love Lotus Land very much, because that's complete lunacy.
I loved it, and I think the woman who made it sounds extraordinary, a wonderful person.
I've been to Lotus Land before, and I had the same reaction this time, actually, as I did last time, which is complete admiration and sort of celebration. But it made me very tired.
How so?
You know, after about 6 hours at Lotus Land, I really, truly had enough.
Is that not also because we'd almost reached the end of the trip?
Well, there was that. We drove from there to the beach. It was wonderful just to be on the beach, see the ocean, and just sort of have this empty, watery space.
Yes, exactly.
Now, the one place I wouldn't have thought of as a garden was when you went to Falling Water. That I find fantastic as part of it, though, because it does, having it slotted into a book about American gardens makes your understanding of what a garden is less garden, more landscape, that even being within a wild landscape is in itself a garden.
Yes, it's an entirety, isn't it? That garden, that place. It's not a garden. You are absolutely right. But in the same way that Central Park isn't a garden.
I think you could make a better argument for Central Park. I mean, I think the nature of a park is a continuum of a garden.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, except that falling water is belongs so much in the woods where it's situated, and with the water too. That I think perhaps I do. You think I was being very self-indulgent?
I couldn't possibly comment, Derry. I actually think there is a, you know, this, the interesting question is, you know, when is a garden not a garden? What is a garden? Let alone what is an American garden? Yeah. And it was Juan Grimm, the Chilean garden designer. I asked him that question some years ago, and he thought and said, if a tree falls in a wood, it creates a glade. If a man cuts down a tree and makes a clearing, he's made a garden. So the same thing, as soon as the hand of man is involved and is deliberate to create an effect, even if that effect is to look completely natural or could have been created naturally, it's still a garden. And I think that's what's happening with falling water, is the relationship to the woods is deliberate. It's not accidental. They're not just a backdrop that happened to be there. No one's got round to sorting out. So by electing to keep it as it is, that is a horticultural decision.
I'm so glad you say that. I know. Don't feel so guilty. You're absolutely right. You put it beautifully.
Monty Don, yeah. Derry Moore, thank you very much for coming on the podcast today to talk about your new book, American Gardens.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mitch.
The AD Aesthete is produced and edited by Diane Dragan and Emma Wortsman. Music by Circus Marcus. All rights reserved by Condé Nast. To reach us about this episode or any other episodes, find us on social media at ArcDigest or email us at letters@arcdigest.com.